BGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 534, recorded on April 2nd, 2019.
Welcome to the 534th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 367th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzig.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Fowl.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. So, we could talk about what we're playing. I played nothing, so, because I was at PAX East all week. What have you been playing, TJ?
That's crazy. You didn't play anything at PAX East?
Oh, we're going to get to that in a moment. Just, what have you been playing?
Still chipping away at Sekiro. I'm really having fun with it. It's hard, but it also might be the most fair From Software game I've ever played. It tells you how to beat enemies along the way. Like, constantly it's giving you hints. It's telling you what to do, how to do it, and, like, it's not even, like, a hand-holdy thing where it drags you along and, like, shoves a tutorial down your throat. It's just these hints. Like, there's this eavesdropping mechanic where you can listen to enemy soldiers talking about something that you're gonna eventually face. Or you might discover, like, a tool or a technique that it's like, this will protect you from electrical attacks, or you can counter electrical attacks with this. And it's like, well, I haven't fought an electrical boss yet, so I guess that's coming. And it's cool. I like that it does that. The game is embroiled in a big old debate about difficulty right now, which From Software games always are. People are making the case of, why doesn't this have an easy mode? Why won't they put that in the From Software game? And other people are like, you can't do that. It would break the spirit of the game and divert time away from other things. And that argument in particular made me laugh, because there's a certain part in the game where you can ring a bell and it makes the game harder. So that is literally, and it's like, it gives you an item and you can use the item and the game goes back to normal. So it's like, cheeky enough, From Software did put a difficulty bar in their game, but they put the only option they made was you can take the game from hard to very hard.
Yeah, it's not like Kingdom Come Deliverance where it's hard because it just sucks, you know. Where the mechanics are bullshit. I mean, it's just, you know, here are the rules, follow them.
Yeah, there's only one, like, enemy that I've come across in the game so far that, like, frustrated me so much that I just, like, abused mechanics of the game to beat them.
You see, that's why I like Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War so much, is that you will come across orc captains who have almost no weaknesses, and you're trying desperately to get them, and basically, that game, they just actively taunt you. They kill you and they say, oh, come back for more, eh? Or something of that variation. And just insult you. By the way, that reminds me, there are mods for Sekiro, which basically just change what the graphic you see when you die is. One is a kanji symbol for noob. Another just gives you the face of Nicolas Cage when you die.
That's funny. That is one of those games that, much like Dragon's Dogma, I'm gonna have to circle back to it eventually. Like, maybe January is usually my time to circle back on, like, older games and play things I missed, but this January was unusually packed.
So what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing some more of my Calcetta game. Okay. And I went back to that to just enjoy hacking, slashing at enemies, and using different abilities, and just having fun with that. It's a nice little system where you get to also collect loot from fighting enemies and mining little, I guess, mineral spots. And then you can upgrade your weapons that you've collected. It's nice music and just, you know, enjoying it.
Okay. Well, there was a bunch of games I played at PAX East. There's also a bunch of games which I didn't play, but there was a lot of news about. We should basically say Borderlands 3 was announced at at PAX East. A lot of people are excited. I'm not.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. The first thing that that I wrote about that game was what Pitchford said immediately, like right out of the gate while he was announcing it, is that it's not going to be Battle Royale. People were legitimately thrilled to hear that.
Pitchford said a lot of things which we're going to talk about lately that we're going to talk about later in the podcast, the news section. But I know I made Scott Green with jealousy because I got to play Dragon Quest. I forgot the name of it. Something 2. Dragon Quest
Builders 2.
Dragon Quest Builders 2, right. So you start the game in a pirate ship, and it's basically how they teach you the mechanics. You know, it shows you how to move, then how to jump, then how to get resources, then how to craft those resources, you know, all on the pirate ship. I'm not going to say it's childish. I'm not even going to say it's family friendly. I'm just going to say it's for kids, but adults will get a chuckle out of it, you know, just enjoy it. I didn't get far in the game, obviously, so I'm probably missed out on all the complex Minecraft-style stuff that you had to do, but I can see where it's going towards. The humor is lowbrow, but not annoyingly so. So, yeah, it's coming out in June, I think, so... We'll probably get the full review from Scott when it actually comes out in a few months.
Yeah, it's looking like June is going to have a lot of games coming out. There'll be the Hyrule Cadence game and, the, of course, Dragon Quest Builders. I think there's some other games, too, coming out. So, yeah, my wallet's going to be hurting in June.
Yeah. As far as another game that's going to be on Nintendo Switch only, I believe it's obviously a Nintendo Switch only, Yoshi's Crafted World was there.
Oh yeah, Yoshi's Crafted World. Yeah, that's come out. That's gonna be good. That's a fun game.
Here's the thing. I didn't like it, but only because in comparison with a similar game, and that's Yoshi's Woolly World. I thought Yoshi's Woolly World was better at portraying this world than the Yoshi game does. I mean, it's not bad. It's just not on the level of Yoshi's Woolly World. You know. Or Yoshi's Yarn, whatever they call those. You know, I think that one of them was called Woolly World, I think, you know. But the Yoshi Yarn games, right? The Yoshi... This one also does...
Yeah, that does sound familiar.
Yeah. This one does arts and crafts this time. And there's... I always found it a little perverted when one Yoshi mounts another Yoshi and rides it like a horse. There's something just perverted about that.
Yoshis don't follow a lot of... standard rules, though. Like, I mean, by all standards, Yoshi is a boy, but he lays eggs.
Yeah, I know. He eats people and poops out eggs. And when you play the game, when you do that, you'll have eggs trailing after you, like a little banner. So you just collect all these eggs, and your egg list, your egg length gets longer and longer and longer. Sort of working like Sonic's rings, you know.
This also happened in Yoshi's Island in the GameCube game. You could do that as well. Have little eggs and you throw them at stuff to achieve different things, to collect coins or to hit enemies.
No, in this game, you don't throw the eggs at all. They're basically your score. And you throw other things to, you spit out other things to get the, to get items. So in this case, the eggs are just trailing after you as, you know, and you're trying to end a level with as many eggs as possible. It also has a 3D element in that you can walk towards or away from the camera. You know, the levels are in that, but it's still a rail, but it's a three-dimensional rail.
Yeah, I played the demo of this, and I was able to collect different things. I think there were some flowers, and when you complete the level, it actually reverses it, and then you have to find these three dog-like things and you go back through the level that you just played, looking for these little doggies, and you collect them, and I guess that's like the final phase of that level.
Yeah. There's also Heave Ho, which is Devolver Digital's next newest game, and I've got a quote. Yahtzee Croshaw. He said of one game, and I can apply it to this game. If this wasn't published by Devolver Digital, Devolver Digital will come in and kidnap it and take it for its own. Basically, you play a head with arms that stick to things, and the entire point of the game is you're swinging your arms and trying to stick to objects and just swing your way to the exit, or actually not an exit, more like a cup, you know? And you could create some horrific faces and arms for your character. I think they just like Halloween stuff. I mean, the base character is very neutral, but you have some horrifying characters that you can create with this game. It's also one of those games, I think, which you really have to play with the people next to you. You can't play multiplayer online. No. You have to do the co-op with people next to you, because this is a sort of thing in which it's sort of like a party sort of atmosphere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. Like I said, it was one of the more – it's like Ape Attack. You know, it's like one of the more – it's so Devolver Digital, it's Devolver Digital, you know. I also should talk about The Outer Wilds. Not The Outer Worlds, The Outer Wilds, in which you play sort of like a human-like alien. And if I was to describe it, I would say it's 2001 A Space Odyssey with banjos. It is very rural and country. I won't say hick. It's more like being in the hills of West Virginia. But they casually talk about space flight. You get into your spaceship and you fly around. There's a mystic object there, and the entire point of the game is that you can't die. You keep on resurrecting. Like the first time I got in my ship, you know, I got too close to the sun. And unlike other games, you're not just going to thrust your way out of there. Nope. I got caught in the gravity. Died, and then I resurrected, and I spoke to the... What? Huh? So, there's a story that's going on. It is so laid back, and mystical at the same time. I also will talk about Swag and Sorcery, which is done by the same guys who did Fight Club. Not Fight Club. Boxing Club. The boxing game. Oh, geez. What was it called again, TJ?
Oh,
they also did Graveyard Keeper. So Swag and Sorcery is sort of like Racketeer, in which you're taking control of an entire town and you're upgrading the town, and adventurers are buying stuff from you and going out to quest, and they come back with stuff that you can craft. And it has the typical retro graphics, you know, but that are on the sweet spot, that just feels so luscious and inviting without seeming too retro or too modern. You know what I mean? They also showed off After Party, which is the next game by the same people who did Oxenfree. And it does all the same mechanics as Oxenfree. The exact same mechanics, right. Same exact conversation systems, except you're in hell. And the two characters were there. Their main idea of escaping hell is to have a drinking contest with Satan and get him drunk and drink him under the table. It's really funny. It's a lot funnier than Oxenfree was, but you can tell that it's still going to have the same existential questions that a lot of people in their 20s ask, you know, out of college, now what sort of stuff.
Interesting. I really liked Oxenfree, so I'm ready to see more from this studio.
Yeah, I mean, this is like they took two of the characters from Oxenfree and just put them in hell. Then there were the trio of games. There were Three Realms. One was, of course, Wrath Aeon of Ruin, which is basically Quake, their version of Quake. And I also played a lot of Ion Maiden, which is actually a build engine game. And since it's a build engine game, the game really is fast. It's almost too fast to control. Because let's face it, you know, the build engine isn't exactly high-tech software.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are excited about Wrath. I like Iron Maiden because I made levels with the build engine. And I would not be surprised if they allow you to create multiplayer levels with the build engine for Ion Maiden 2. And oh, by the way, the reason why it's called Ion Maiden is because the name Iron Maiden is already taken for a game. So, there's that. The other game was Devil's Hunt. And I don't know if you've seen it. It's basically a cross between Dark Souls, Batman Arkham Asylum, and maybe Ninja Gaiden. Except again, it's in hell, and you play a guy who committed suicide and is resigned to hell, but is now fighting back against the devil and angels too. So it's basically Spawn. And it's hard. It is really hard. You have to learn patterns. It's sort of like Batman Arkham Asylum, except up to 11. And, so I think it's gonna satisfy the taste of those who like Dark Souls, but wanted to be more like Ninja Gaiden.
So Sekiro.
Okay. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, the guys who did Rust are guys who split away from 3D Realms, and basically there's a very, very, very friendly competition between the two. They both really like each other, so they're basically just upping their game against each other, you know?
That's always a good
thing. Nothing but praise for each other, so it's an interesting mechanic going on there.
Healthy competition is always a really good thing.
The most intriguing... go ahead.
I was just going to say, the kind of stuff that, like, one inspires the other to do better, or, like, forces the other to do better just by...
All right, in this case, it's more like they just want to play each other's games.
Yeah. I mean, like, Sekiro started as a Tenchu game, but at the same time, I really do think that Nioh coming out from Team Ninja kind of pushed From Software to up their game a little bit and, like, play around with what they could do, which is great.
The biggest surprise of the games that I played, which I really liked, was Splitgate Arena Warfare. What?
Oh, have you played this one before?
Splitgate?
Mm-hmm.
No, I hadn't. It was the first time I played it. And basically, for those who don't know it, it is basically Halo, but with portal guns. And by the way, its similarity to Halo is not an accident, because the two founders of the studio, who, by the way, they named it after their dorm, 1047 games. They were the kind of guys who went into their dorm room and played Halo all day. So that's where this game comes from. The game is extremely Halo, right down to the red versus blue.
Yeah. I've talked to their head designer, Ian Prohl.
Yeah, that's he's one times. Of the guys who... Yeah, he was the one who went to the other guy's dorm room to play Halo.
Mm-hmm. And he has a clear love of, like, we've talked ad nauseum about, like, how good Halo 2 was, and, like, he wanted to, like, his response was, like, there really aren't games like Halo 2 anymore. Like, you have all these shooters, but none of them really take on that sort of bravado that Halo had.
And you know what? I'm surprised no one did this before, because it's sort of like, yeah, we love Halo. What if we could do portal guns with it? Because, there's a sniper up there who's harassing you. Well, guess what? Fucking put a portal behind him and then just say, hey, guess who it is? and there's so many things you can do with I can see where this is going to be an esports game. And I want to see how fast and how quick people start doing portal tricks. You know, because you got to whip out the portal gun, then whip out your own gun. You know, I'm dying to see. Because you know how people exploit stuff, you know, and just do things really fast? You know, like when you watch people playing StarCraft, it's like on hyperspeed. It's sort of the thing I want to see here at Splitgate. I want to see how professional players will abuse the portal gun.
Yeah. Like, one of the things we've often talked about is, like, you can be a good fundamental shooter at this game and be good, but you can also be someone who's just creative with the portals and creative with their momentum. Because that's an important part of the game, is that the momentum that you go through the portal with carries through to the other side. And so you have a situation where you can jump off of a high area into a portal and launch yourself across the map. from another portal, and it's impressive. It like I can't like.
What the game it needs is heavy objects, though. It needs heavy objects so you can portal onto someone's head.
Yeah, and I mean, the physics for that has got to be difficult to manage because you don't like want. You don't want someone to go too fast and literally fly off the map every time.
Well, that would be their fault now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but you also want to manage that to a place where, like, learning, like, the speed and direction at which you'll go is important, just as important as, like, where you're putting your portals in the first place. I really do think it's a high-ceiling game. Like, they've talked about, like, they have people that are figuring it out. They've had it at PAX Arena a couple times now, and they've had some fans of the game that are just doing amazing things already, and I really am excited to see, like, what somebody like Shroud or like, other really good either CSGO players or Fortnite players would do if they got their hands on.
The only problem is that Halo Reach is coming out soon, and, you know, it's like all the actual Halo stuff is going to be coming out. So it might, prioritize what users it might have. I mean, you know, people can play more than one game, of course. But if Microsoft wasn't releasing Halo on PC, you could see where this could really take off. Because, like I said, even without the portal gun, it's Halo. It's flat out Halo.
Yeah, and I think it has the way that it's designed is just unique enough to make it its own sort of thing. And I really do feel like, as a parallel, it has every chance to be kind of the Skullgirls of first-person shooters.
I mean, here's the thing. It has a mechanic that no one else is doing. I mean, not even Half-Life 2. No one, they really never took advantage of the portal gun for multiplayer in Half-Life 2, which shocks me.
Yeah, and, like, I can heap praise on this game all day, but it really is something just... It really is something that you just have to see.
Well, it was a hit at PAX East, so there you go. They also finally showed some gameplay, some actual gameplay for The Outer Worlds. And it's very interesting. It's first-person shootery, but it has a heavy role-playing element. So you can also kill civilians if you want to. And you're not going to... It's a moral thing, not, you know... There's no penalty for it, so that I know of. So, you know, it's like, it's up to you if you want to be a prick, I guess. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of customization in that game. Someone put on one of those weird heads. It's in the video that I posted on my site, the 10 top games shown at PAX East. It looks polished, and it looks good. It'll be interesting to see what comes of it.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see that. Like, I haven't had a chance to check out the gameplay, but I'm ready. I'm ready for a new Obsidian RPG universe. I'm really excited to see.
I didn't play Streets of Rage 4. I didn't play Mortal Kombat 11, although it was at PAX East in which they announced Mortal Kombat 11 to the Switch, which is about as un-Nintendo-like a game you can have on the Switch.
Yeah.
And, a game like Mortal Kombat 11, it makes me think, you know, they got to get Xbox Live on that thing. They've got to get Xbox Live on that thing if they want to really enjoy Mortal Kombat 11 to its max. It's not – I mean, yeah, you can make it just a single-player game, but, you know, there are so many people who love to play online fighting games, and that's one of them. I have to imagine that – you know, Nintendo is going to get ready to get a real online service for that, for the Switch.
Right. A lot of that is dependent upon the net code of the game. Smash Ultimate is notorious for its tremendously awful online play if you're on a Wi-Fi connection. And the problem with the Switch is that it doesn't have a Ethernet cable port. You have to actually buy an adapter that hooks into the USB port on the console, which is a shame.
You know, it's really funny. I just remembered this. One of the things we were talking about Xbox Live was they were hinting around that you could get achievements, and that included, if it was on the Switch, you'd get Xbox Live achievements for Switch games, which is bizarre beyond belief, but hey. So you imagine playing something like Splatoon 2 or Smash Brothers Brawl and just start getting Xbox Live achievements as you play?
That'd be kind of okay.
It'd just be weird, that's all. They also had Dauntless there, and they had new bosses. You know, they had all new monsters. I didn't get to play it, but that's going to be an interesting game. You know, like I said, I don't like Monster Hunter World because the controls are ass. At least with Dauntless, the controls are made by, for humans. So, at least, you know. And it takes out a lot of the bad about Monster Hunter World and keeps a lot of the good. Basically, the good of Monster Hunter World is tracking down a monster with a group of friends and killing it.
Yeah, and you're right. It is way streamlined from, like, Monster Hunter World. There's not super stupid unintuitive menus to go through. It's pretty easy to do, like, you have so many different weapons, and it's pretty easy to access the combos and special skills you can do with those weapons. And it really just is more about the communication and the teamwork and getting it done.
Yeah.
So, like, I really do have to praise them for making, I wouldn't say Monster Hunter Lite. I really would say it's just like, say it's more like an intuitive Monster Hunter.
Yeah, I mean, the easy creatures are really easy. So I want monsters that are so difficult that even with four players, it's sort of like he kicks your ass and you just want to go out there and try again and try new tactics, you know? That's what I want. You see, that's my sort of Dark Souls thing.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, that's what Monster Hunter got famous on, is that you have the easy monsters, but then you have these super, like, diamond, unbreakable, hard-ass, horrible things that you just need the good teamwork to get it done. I think a lot of people would enjoy that. Like, you have the easy ones that are fun, like, you don't have to stress too much over them, and then the hard-as-nails, like, make-you-work-for-it type monsters.
And finally, there's I didn't play it, but I watched videos for it. Layers of Fear 2. I mean, the first Layers of Fear, got mixed reviews. So it'll be interesting to see about Layers of Fear 2. It looks like it's taking place on a cruise ship this time. And, you know, that's one thing about these sort of PT-style horror games. I don't know if any of them have ever been on a cruise ship, which is actually, you know, you're on a ship, which means you're surrounded by death, you know. So, it'll be interesting to see. Did you see anything about Layers of Fear 2?
I haven't. I saw a little bit of it at PAX South, but I haven't seen anything since.
Okay. So, yeah, on a side note, I sent something to Scott from the Nintendo booth. It should be reaching him on Friday. It'll be interesting to see if he likes it. Little hint, Scott, it'll probably be for your kids more than it'll be for you. Well, I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it'll be for you, and you just keep it away from your kids. That's mine.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. And speaking of Borderlands 3, Borderlands 3 might be an Epic Store exclusive, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. An errant tweet from the official Borderlands Twitter account may have unintentionally revealed that Borderlands 3 will be out on September 13th. The tweet, which appeared to be an ad that fired too early, has since been deleted, but luckily it was the image was captured and it has been uploaded to the Internet Archive. Gearbox used the word mayhem to describe Borderlands 3 several times previously, so while the title itself isn't on the tweet, it's pretty clear what the reference is. Courtesy of Twitter World, Twitter user Wario64, it also appears that Borderlands 3 will be released on the Epic Games Store. A second deleted ad post includes a few seconds of footage and an Epic Store logo at the end. This doesn't necessarily mean it'll be an Epic Store exclusive, but there was no Steam logo. Now, our friend Gearbox boss Randy Pritchford responded to the leak, saying that the publisher 2K Games and its parent 2K Take-Two Interactive are responsible for, quote-unquote, all decisions regarding price points, territories, distribution, and platform partnerships. He then said that he thinks, quote-unquote, exclusives are fine when they come with advantages and when they're short, say, 6 months. So, yeah, he's basically saying, yeah, it's going to be an exclusive on the Epic Store for 6 months before it goes on Steam. A lot of people lost their shit about this. And, you know, from a marketplace standpoint, you know, I don't care. You know, however, I have heard complaints from some people, which does concern me, that the Epic Store may may have lacked security, you know, and it's exploitable, which is a concern. We all saw what happened with Sony's PSN a couple of years ago. We don't want the same thing with Epic, you know. So I don't really care about the storefront. I do care about my information being safe.
Right.
And Epic, yeah, I remember hearing about there was a file that apparently Epic was reading, or somehow Epic's program was reading one of Steam's data files, and I think people were claiming that somebody in China was using that data. I don't know how they were doing it, supposedly, but it does raise concerns.
Yeah, I mean, like, Epic is basically printing money with Fortnite at this point, so it seems like something.
Especially what they had planned with it too. Continue your point, but I want to bring something up afterwards.
They don't have any, like, if security is a concern, then I'm fully I'm 100% confident that they have the resources to fix it up, and I'm sure that they will, because unlike Valve, they seem to care about their their store.
Yeah, but they're also not they're not experienced at it. That's the problem, though. They haven't. Valve has gone through the trials of early, you know, having to deal with security and that sort of stuff. So that's the part, you know, that's the part that Epic isn't experienced at yet. Yeah.
Right.
Now, one of the things that there was a video that I watched earlier about Epic, and you know, they recently had a concert by Marshmello for 10 minutes, right? And a lot of people, and I seem to agree, I agree that this is basically a test for advertising on Fortnite, you know.
Yeah.
Not advertising as in drink Coke, but more like you know, events that are cross promoting stuff, you know.
Yeah. It's really funny too, because people were like, this is amazing. This is the first time this has ever been done. And I'm like,
let me, Second Life?
Yeah, I was gonna say, let me introduce you to the content bizarro world that is Second Life.
Yeah, I've played Second Life. That is a crazy game. You have all sorts of fandoms that have created little worlds for you to visit. You can visit Midgar from Final Fantasy VII. You can visit Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and just all sorts of places.
That Epic, 48% of Epic is owned by Tencent. And they live on that shit. You know? And Epic already has, you know, Microsoft points, basically. You know, it's just, they're geared to, you know, grab all the money they possibly can from your wallet. And the thing is that this cross-promotion is a little bit scary, to tell you the truth. It'll be interesting to see where this goes, because basically that concert wasn't for the fans, really. It was for other companies saying, look what we can do with this.
Countdown to when you start putting up, like, walls and ceilings, and they start having, like, Coca-Cola ads on them.
Like I said, I don't think it'll be that blatant, but it'll be more like, you know, say they wanted to advertise a new Pixar movie, you know, and they just interrupt, you know, 10 minutes of no fighting or anything like that, just, you know, a scheduled, hey, we're going to have a Pixar thing, and, you know, you have these Pixar characters running around, and then, you know, the trailer runs. And, you know, you can it does have the ability to create stuff in the game. The thing is, you can't create what they're creating, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, we're looking at the future of Fortnite, and it's basically turning into a cell phone game.
Yeah.
Second Life cell phone. I mean, like I said, I can laugh about it because I haven't been sucked into the game. I have not purchased Fortnite. I have not dealt with it. I have not had to, have the game say, hey, why don't you buy this cool stuff?
You haven't pulled out your credit card to get yourself a loot llama.
Yeah. And also, you know, the game very much makes it, you know, if you don't buy some of this stuff, you're going to get pwned, you know. You jumped right in. You paid to get in. You did the entire, you know, what's called Founders thing, paid, what, $30 for it?
I received it it was a review copy, basically. That was what the review copy was the Founders pack.
Yeah, I know, but people, before the game was released, you know, was, and I remember this was, I think it was back in 2012 when I first reported on Fortnite, and basically it was supposed to be what Save the World is now, and its big thing was it was going to be the first Unreal Engine 4 game.
Yeah,
and this was years and years and years. It was like 2012, like 7 years ago. Who knew? Nope. It was like, oh, it's vaporware now. Nope. Not vaporware now.
But, like, why do security is a concern, but I do not understand people who give so much of a shit about where a game goes. Like, bring back the – somebody said it best today. I can't even take credit for this. Bring back the console wars because the PC storefront wars are stupid as fuck.
Yeah, I agree, because I remember the days when there was no launcher. You just got your game, you installed it, and you played it. You know, it was no big deal. And
here's the thing. You know, the console wars, you're actually buying games for different machines. All these storefronts are for the same friggin' machine.
Yeah. So it's like, who cares if you're playing on good old games or Ubisoft's thing or EA's or Steam or whatever.
I mean, can you imagine how stupid the conversation would have been in, like, the early 2000s or the 1990s if people were like, I'm not going to go to Target to buy my PS3 game. I'm going to go to Walmart.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, remember, for a long time, for a few years, you know, you had each chain having their own DLC bonus.
Yeah, for,
you
like,
you had to choose which store
Sims.
You wanted to go to get the DLC that you wanted.
The Sims did that. That was really frustrating. Because now that you can get, like, the Sims 2 for free, for example, you can't get all those little DLCs because they're not packaged with the game. It's really annoying.
Amiibos were the same way. Certain stores had certain amiibos.
Oh, yeah. And that's all gone now. I mean, console games, you know, you can't buy PC games. If you go to Best Buy, the only PC games you could buy are maybe World of Warcraft and the Bundleware.
Yeah. It's all about selling those gift cards that have, like, points or packs for whatever now.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that later in the podcast. There's going to be on to the next item. Go ahead, Sask. Go ahead, teacher.
Okay. Video game news subreddit closes for 24 hours to protest bigotry from Kotaku. Last night, the subreddit rgames, a subreddit with 1.7 million subscribers, announced it would be closing on April Fool's Day to shed light on the bigotry in the online gaming community. Not April Fool's, the post begins. It continues, this April Fool's, we decided to take things a little bit more seriously and shed light on a growing, pervasive issue that has affected the community of our games and gaming communities as a whole. Though certain memes, such as Gamers Rise Up, surrounding gamers are largely viewed as a humorous interpretation of a mindset, at the core of the humor is a set of very serious issues that affect all gaming enthusiasts. By showing disdain or outright rejecting minority and marginalized communities, we become more insular. In this, we lose out on the chance to not only show compassion to these people, but also the chance to grow our own community and diversify the demographics of those involved in it. Whether it's misogyny, transphobia, homophobia, racism, or a host of other discriminatory practices, now is the time to stymie the flow of regressive ideas and prevent them from ever becoming the norm. At the end of the post, after noting that bigoted language in our games is not an infrequent occurrence, and citing several instances of transphobia, homophobia, Islamophobia, and misogyny, moderators call on users to celebrate the diversity of others' backgrounds. Then, listing several charities for LGBT plus individuals, people of color, and women, the moderators say, this April Fool's, we're also asking you to take into consideration the idea of helping these organizations out. There's a lot of support for the subreddit's move on Twitter, and gaming forums like Resetira.com, or sorry, there's a lot of support for the subreddit's move on Twitter and gaming forums like Resetira.com. One user acknowledged that, I am not a fan of that subreddit, but I am really impressed that they took a stand like that. On Twitter, one user said, and this day, filled with jokes, it's nice to see something serious and heartwarming. Others reacted negatively, referring to the move as quote-unquote virtue signaling or going full blue-pilled and cringe.
You know what the irony is? That they're making a Matrix reference, and the entire that entire franchise was created by two trans women.
Yeah.
Although, just because they're trans women doesn't mean they're absolute shits. But anyways, that's something I don't want to get into. But anyways, I have no idea what the fuck virtual signaling is supposed to fucking mean. That just makes me want to slap him in the face.
It's whenever somebody is doing something nice and you don't like it, so you get mad at it and call it virtue signaling. That's literally what it has become in the modern era of discourse.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, the blue pill thing is very popular in the MRA forums. So, you know, I loved getting them all upset just by saying I respect women and just watching them froth at the mouth. How dare you?
I've never seen anyone say the phrase virtue signaling but didn't also say within some paragraph of there the phrase, and I say this unironically, SJW or social justice warrior. And
I remember the phrase white knighting as well.
Yeah, white knighting. I mean, I just say, I'm just being a decent human being.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I have no interest in her as a sex object. Trust me.
But I am happy to see this. I am happy to see that, like, our games has always been kind of a toxic cesspool. It's not as bad as, like, certain channels, like the Chans, I would say.
Any place where you have absolute anonymity, you know, my philosophy is, you know, I only say things that I would say to people in their face, in person. Because I was born in 1970, I grew up in New York, you know, and if any of these Midwestern white boys ever tried any of that stuff, they'd either run screaming or they'd get their ass handed to them or killed with their last words on their lips being, "What did I say? What did I say?"
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's cool. It's cool that they took the – on the day that, like, our games would be the most buzzing with, I guess, like, all the things going on April Fool's Day, because April Fool's has been become kind of a gamer's holiday where you see all these ridiculous, like,
For Honor actually had their game infested with raving rabbits.
There was an ad that Oceanhorn 2 posted showing a video of a guy playing Oceanhorn, or was supposed to be Oceanhorn on Nintendo, Super Nintendo, but you could see it's a Super Famicom, and it's an old VHS video, and you could see today's date, or that date, April 1st. It was a really mind-bending video, so I was like, so it is nice to see somebody else maybe taking it a little bit serious and do something nice and raise awareness and talk about some charities that people can donate to and help out other people, which is really what the gaming community should be about, is helping other people.
You know, when you have a bright light, that's when the cockroaches scurry away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least this April Fool's, not a single reference to Half-Life 3, right? God, that was an old joke, and I'm tired of it.
Actually, there was one by Extra Credit. They were doing an April Fool's thing as well.
They're like at a party, aren't they?
Yeah, it was just a nice, fun little joke thing they did.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. John and Brenda Romero working with Paradox on a new strategy IP. This is from Eurogamer. Romero Games, the studio belonging to John and Brenda Romero, have signed a deal with Paradox to make a strategy game based on a new intellectual property. In a press release today, Brenda Romero said, "This has been a project we've been wanting to work on for a long time, so it's especially exciting that we're partnering up with Paradox Interactive to fully realize that dream. We can't wait to tell everyone more, so make sure you watch this space." The Romeros will be in London this week attending EGX Res. Romero Games is based in Ireland and will release free game Sigil on Expanse of sorts, the original 1993 Doom, this month.
Yeah, Yeah, it's basically a standalone expansion that's using the Doom engine, which is kind of neat. I have a feeling that Brenda will be developing 98% of this game, and the other 2% will just be John donating his hair. You don't get it, because if you've seen John Romero, he has a massive amount of hair. Oh, wait, am I thinking of the right guy? Yeah, I am.
He has a massive amount of hair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, John Romero, of course, is famous for wanting to make people his bitch. Back in the Daikatana days.
Really nice guy, though. I think maybe one of the nicest people I've ever met in the industry.
Yeah, and here's the thing. A strategy game, which is why I surmise that Brenda would be the one developing it, is not something that John is known for, you know. And it's also Paradox Interactive. And Paradox, you know, likes to take chances on weird stuff, so it'll be interesting to see what Paradox is doing with this.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, too. Like, I don't know what a John Romero strategy game looks like. I'm way, way, way more used to super fast.
How about a strategy game with cacodemons?
Yeah. You know, like, a Halo Wars in the Doom universe would be kind of dope.
We already have a Doom RTS coming.
Do they mean 4X strategy? Like, I think Solaris
is a strategy game. They don't mean next. I don't think they mean 4X. I think it's going to be a strategy game. Could be a tactical RPG, like something like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. Like I said, I think here's the thing. They're a pair of developers, and I don't know if strategy games have ever been John Romero's strength. I mean, maybe he has. Maybe he's always wanted to make a strategy game. But we'll see if it's edgy, you know. I'm willing to bet you it's not.
No.
What, are you going to play Sigil?
Oh, wait. Do you know that Brenda Romero has credits for Jagged Alliance and Jagged Alliance 2?
Yeah, and those are, by the way, those are strategy games. So, yeah, it could be a tactical combat game. Like Jagged Alliance. So anyways, and they married a couple of years ago too, so she's been around, before John. We're going to move on to the next news item. Sony unveils PSN refund policy, and this comes to us from the Next Web. Okay, I know it's time for you two to get angry. I don't know if we spoke about this last week. We couldn't do, we recorded a podcast last week and I couldn't post it because I was at PAX East. I didn't have time. So, did we talk about, Sony's, changing PSN policy?
Yes.
I do remember we did talk about Sony, but not this specific story, a different thing what Sony was doing.
Well, no, Sony was no longer going to be allowing people to sell their
Right, that's what it was.
Well, Sony is apparently fooling when it quietly changed its refund policy yesterday. According to the new rules, all purchases from the store, including games, DLC, and other add-ons, now come with a 14-day window in which players can request a refund, even in the case of pre-orders. Before now, gamers outside of Europe couldn't request a refund on a pre-order. Depending on what you reordered, the rules were a bit different. If you pre-ordered a game with more than 2 weeks before its release, you could cancel and get a refund at any time before the game's release. If you pre-order with less than 2 weeks before the release, then you have the standard 14-day window. The two-week window is pretty standard. Microsoft and Steam both offer no questions asked refunds within the same time period. But in order to be eligible for a refund, PlayStation gamers have to follow some pretty strict guidelines. Not only can they not play the game, but they can't download or stream it either. For comparison's sake, you can refund an Xbox or Steam game if you've played for less than 2 hours. So you can at least try the game to see if you like it and you still get your money back. With PlayStation games, even doing a pre-launch download means you don't qualify for a refund. Also, the refund will go to your PS wallet, even if you use a credit card to purchase the game. Sony has allowed itself one escape valve, that it being a refund already played games it deems faulty. Which makes me wonder, what the fuck does faulty mean?
None of this makes sense.
If it
sense,
sucks,
like,
does that mean it's faulty? If the gameplay is bad, does it mean it's faulty?
Like, are we talking No Man's Sky on launch faulty?
We're talking about buggy that you can't play buggy, but then again, there are games, you know, that just have Senua's Sacrifice had one catastrophic bug in which you couldn't complete the game and your save, and since it auto saves, your entire game is fucked and you had to play it over. Does that qualify as faulty?
Yeah, that is. I feel like they have to expand on that guideline a bit, right? They probably have to go in and define faulty.
I don't know. This is Sony.
Yeah,
they're the ones who had exploding batteries and created fake movie critics.
Hmm. If that's the case, like, I mean, I'll make an argument for what's faulty. I'll go out on a limb and say, yeah, like, it's not that just I didn't like it. It's that at the end of the game, the credits didn't roll. It's faulty.
The game crashed my PS4 once. It's faulty.
It makes my PS4 disk hard drive run real loud. It's faulty.
But anyways, you know, here's the thing. The other thing you have to understand, too, a lot of people have their auto updates always on their PS4. And Sony is telling them, well, you should turn it off so that you don't automatically download a game. Well, you're forcing people to guess, you know, have their auto – either they want their auto updates off or on. You know, they'd rather have it on, but if it means that this is going to happen, then they'll want to keep it off, you know. But you two play it with PS4 a lot more than I do. I mean, you know how important auto updates are.
Yeah, but, like, I would also argue that, like, you know when you pre-order a game. For PS4 games, I don't know how Xbox Live right now, but for PS4 games, a pre-ordered game won't download unless it's like it'll do it like 3 days before the game launches, but not really like.
But what if you have one of those games in which you preload the game before it's launched?
That's what I'm saying, is that it'll preload 3 days. It won't preload before 3 days before the game. Like, pretty standard on PS4 pre-orders, they won't actually let you download the game until about 3 days before. That's always been the case with, like, I think Sekiro did that for me, BlazBlue did that for me. Pretty sure that's most of the games on there when it comes to pre-orders. So there's no way to really accidentally down. Like, once you hit those 3 days, yes, but by that point, like, aren't you pretty much invested in it if you're, like, waiting until... I guess there is the kind of person that, like, waits until the last second and then 24 hours before, like, suddenly decides, I don't have the money for this, I need that money back, and then they're kind of SOL because the game's already been downloaded.
Yeah, but there's an option on the PS4 to automatically download files for pre-ordered games, you know, and a lot of people have it on.
Oh, you know, you're right. There is, like, I've seen, like, DLC get downloaded. I wonder if that counts, or if it has to be, like, the main game.
Yeah, what if you get automatic DLC for the game? It's just shady, you know?
Yeah, this is definitely seeming anti-consumerist, like you were saying on the previous story about Sony. They don't seem to really... I mean, it's like, you gotta have at least a chance to see if you like the game or not before, you know, you close this window. And it's like... What are they expecting? Like, oops, I bought a game I didn't mean to. I want my money back without even trying it out. It doesn't make any sense.
This is going sort of to the most strict end of the brick-and-mortar video game days. Like, I remember Funko Land back in the day. Once you pulled the plastic wrapping off the game, it was basically like a used car. It's now a used game. You don't get to trade it in for your full price unless the game is somehow broken.
Well, it's better than Nintendo, though. There's no refund at all.
Yeah. Nintendo ain't going to let you send you back your games. You bought it. Buyer beware.
No, it's just digital items are not returnable or refundable, period, end of story. Unless there's, of course, a law, which is, by the way, what forced Sony to do refunds, because in certain countries, by law, you have to offer refunds. You don't have a choice in the matter. So in those countries, consumers are protected.
Yeah, this is a bummer. I don't know when or if this will ever affect me, but it is sort of, you know, closing down the gaps and any opportunity to sort of see what I think of a game. And if I hate it, I just have to live with the purchase. That is always sort of a shame.
I mean, it's your fault if you buy a bad game. I mean, that's fine, but...
Yes. You know, that is basically what this policy is saying.
Yeah. Anyway, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, we enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Al Fouchard.
And if you go to my Twitter account, I posted a video of the top 10 games at PAX East if you want to see some of those games in action. And, yeah, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.